Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the midweek edition of the Panic Podcast. Good to have you with us. We are in Ecclesiastes for the last time in this current series of study, chapter 12. So get your Bibles opened up, get your cups of coffee poured, get your kids parked in front of the TV for half an hour, and we'll get started in a second. Well, I sure hope you're all having a great week. I hope you're enjoying the presence of the Lord in your life and the blessing of the Lord. And I hope that you're taking advantage of all the opportunities you have to do good work for Him. In Ecclesiastes chapter 12, it's interesting, Monday's program we talked about personal responsibility, and we're here again talking about living responsibly in your youth, because old age and death are just around the corner. Ecclesiastes 12. King Solomon uses different figures to depict the declining joy and the waning physical powers of old age. And he advises responsible living before old age sets in. Verse 2 says, "Before the sun and the light and the moon and the stars grow dark and the clouds return after the rain, the miseries of old age, the days of trouble and the approach of death," in verses 6 and 7, are likened to recurring thunderstorms. As Solomon saw it, old age was something not necessarily to be enjoyed. Now, don't forget that Solomon's observations were all made under the sun, okay? His conclusion about old age, which we're going to get to in the course of the study, was made under the sun. Elsewhere in the Bible, as a matter of fact, old age is celebrated, but here it seems very negative. But let's be honest, old age can be a negative experience or not. For Solomon, as clouds often block out the light of the sun, the moon, and the stars, and so old age to him is a period of diminishing joy or light and increasing gloom, dark, heralding the approach of the long night of death. Verse 3, "When the keepers of the house tremble and the strong men stoop, when the grinders cease because they are few, and those looking through the windows grow dim." Now, this verse, I'm chuckling because I'm thinking back to how we talked about it in Bible study a few weeks ago at church, and one of the people that was out actually got the whole verse. A lot of people, they read way more into it than Solomon meant. You know, this verse has elicited more controversy than is warranted. Essentially, in verse 3 that we just read, the preacher is describing the human body in old age. So the keepers of the house refer to one's legs. The keepers of the house tremble. Yeah, the legs of a senior citizen tremble. They're a little bit shaky sometimes. An older person begins to totter. He's not as sure in his steps as he once was, right? Like, when you reach my age, you feel like you should be making Relief Factor commercials instead of recording podcasts for the Bible. I mean, maybe you're like me. You know, you've reached a certain age, and you groan when you get out of bed in the morning or when you stand up from the sofa after you've watched a movie on TV. You know, you might be glad to know, by the way, that that it's actually scriptural to do that. 2 Corinthians 5:4 says, "For while we are in this body, we groan and are burdened." I don't think that's what Paul was getting to there, but it happens, right? Have you ever watched a movie with your wife or husband, and you got up when it was over, and it was like, oh, you let out this horrible groan. Yeah, when you get older, your knees could hurt, and your hips, and your back. You got to be a little more careful when you're walking across uneven ground or when you're climbing a ladder. I tell the story. I had two things happen to me when I was much, much younger. Back when I was in the, I don't know if it was like the 7th or the 8th grade or something. I mean, it was way back in the last century. I messed up my left knee, and I will never forget it. It was in the wintertime. It was the last day of school before Christmas break. And we were either playing like football in the snow. It's Canada, right? Or playing hockey. I can't remember which. It was so long ago. But I slipped and I turned head over heels. And when I landed full force on my left knee. And I actually jolted my kneecap out of its position on my knee. And it hurt like the dickens. And I reached down. And of course, I was wearing like a snowsuit. You guys in the southern U.S., do you know what that is? Like snow pants. And I could feel that my kneecap wasn't where it was supposed to be. And I remember pushing it back on top of my knee. And I thought I was going to die. I thought I was going to die. The pain was so excruciating. And I must have finished out the day in school. I honestly don't remember what I did in school after that. I remember sitting in the car, driving to Grandma's house for Christmas. And my left knee, was swollen so badly that my pants were like tight around my leg. And my knee was black and blue for days and days. And I remember Dad, when we got to Grandma's house, like the next day, taking me to see the doctor, like in the hospital, like emergency room kind of thing. And the doc looked at it and he said, my knee was okay. But he said that, you know, when I turn 30, basically he said, when you turn 30, you're going to feel this. And I didn't know what he meant by that. But it eventually, you know, the swelling went down and I was fine. My knee worked just fine. But I always, when I went to kneel down like at church or something, I'd always have to kneel on the other knee, my right knee, because my left knee would hurt. But it didn't bother me when I was running or jogging or, you know, playing hockey or whatever. It didn't bother me. But, you know, as sure as, you know, day follows night, when I turned 30, my knee hurt. And then when I turned 40, it hurt even more. And when I turned 50, it hurt. And as I'm sitting here right now, I noticed I have a pain in my left knee. And about 25 years ago, it was very shortly before I left Canada and moved down here to the southern U.S., I was helping Mom and Dad move an old washing machine and dryer out of their basement. So Mom and Dad's house had this steep, narrow set of stairs, and Dad and I lifted the dryer out, which was not a problem. Those dryers, they don't weigh anything. And I was on the top pulling up, and Dad was on the bottom pushing up. And of course, I'm thinking, my dad's an old man. I don't want to drop this on top of him. So we got the dryer out and got it into the back of somebody's pickup. And then we went to move the washing machine, and it weighed a ton. I never lifted anything so heavy in my life. So we're trying to get it up these stairs, and I'm doing good. You know, I'm trying to lift with my you know, legs, not with my back. You know, I'm not stupid. But I got to the very top stair, and my next step up was to go on to the landing. And I had no room, I had no leverage, and I had to lift this thing. You know, it was so heavy, and I didn't want Dad to hurt himself. So I lifted with my back, and I heard it, and I felt it the minute it happened. And I got the thing, I got it out to the truck, and we hefted it up onto the back of the truck. And I stood there, and I bent over a couple of times to see that I could still do it. And of course, I had all the adrenaline, and my back hurt a little bit, but it didn't hurt a lot. But that night, my Lord, I had never felt pain like that before. My back hurt so much. And what was bad was the day after, in 2 days, I had to fly down here to visit, you know, the woman I was engaged to that I would marry, and you know, the whole reason I was leaving Canada. And I went to the emergency room before I left, and the doctor, they took some x-rays, and he said, everything looks okay. Of course, backs are always hard to figure, right? But he said, you're going to feel this when you're 50. So I'm like, yeah, I'm like 35 or something, so I didn't think anything of it. And sure enough, I mean, it hurt a lot in the plane, and it hurt while I was down there. But, you know, I did recover after a week or two, and I'm feeling just fine. But sure enough, you know, it was never the same after that. But now that I'm, you know, advanced age, it really hurts. I mean, I can't sit in certain positions. When I get up, it aches. I mean, I've never felt, I have a great empathy for people with bad backs. So what happens? You abuse your body when you're young, trying to help your mom and dad, and you pay for it later on. So that's why I say when you get older, everything you have hurts. When your shoulders stoop, and it happens, right? People, their shoulders stoop. It means you don't stand as tall as you used to. It happens to all of us at some point. What's worse than rounded shoulders? It's the grinders cease because they are few. In other words, when you get older, it's like the final humiliation. Not only do you have to wear glasses, not only do you have to wear hearing aids, but your teeth start falling out. Oh, the humiliation never ends. Fortunately, I still have all mine, and I might say I've never had a cavity in my whole life. Thank you very much. But a lot of people, when they get older, and if I live longer, I'm going to probably have to get bridges and caps and partials and then a full set of uppers and lowers. You wear bifocals, trifocals, quadfocals, but you're still getting older, and your eyes just aren't up to the job like they used to be. But then you get to verses 6 and 7. Remember him before the silver cord is severed and the golden bowl is broken, before the pitcher is shattered at the spring and the wheel broken at the well, and the dust returns to the ground it came from and the spirit returns to God who gave it. You know, in the middle of encouraging responsible living while you're young, enjoying life while you can, the idea to remember him, remember God, is repeated. The dissolution of the body is suggested by light being extinguished, the silver cord holding a golden bowl in which the light burns snaps and the bowl is broken. Death is referred to by water being unavailable. You can't get water from the pitcher because it's broken, and the wheel by which it is drawn from the well is broken. I mean, that's basically that's your body when you get real old. And the final description of death is the reversal of creation in verse 7. The spirit returns to the God who gave it, and your body to the dust from which it is taken. And Solomon closes his book by reiterating his theme of the futility of all of human behavior, and by recommending that people simply fear God and keep his commandments. Look at verse 8. Meaningless, says the teacher. Everything is meaningless. So from chapter 1, verse 12 to chapter 6, verse 9, Solomon demonstrated the limitations of human effort. And from chapter 6, verse 10 to chapter 11, verse 6, he reiterated the themes that he opened his book with. That is, everything is meaningless. Everything is meaningless in life except enjoying life as God enables you to. Apart from enjoying one's lot in life in the fear of God, life truly is meaningless. Now, there's a very interesting couple of verses here. There's a peculiar authority with which Solomon claimed his book was written. So let's read verses 9 to 12 of chapter 12. Not only was the teacher wise, as Solomon, but he's writing in the third person, right? Not only was the teacher wise, but he also imparted knowledge to the people. He pondered and searched out and set in order many proverbs. The teacher searched to find just the right words, and what he wrote was upright and true. Solomon stressed the validity of the teaching of this book by referring to its authority and by warning his readers about the futility of seeking answers from different kinds of books. First, he refers to himself as the teacher, one of three kinds of leaders in Israel at that time. There were prophets, there were priests, and there were teachers. He took careful and thoughtful care in producing his book, so you ought to pay attention to it. He also said that he sought to give his book as aesthetically pleasing a form without sacrificing the truth of what he wrote. He sought to find just the right words, and the Hebrew is delightful or pleasing words. Verses 11 and 12, he says, "The words of the wise are like goads. Their collected sayings are like firmly embedded nails given by one shepherd. Be warned, my son, of anything in addition to them. Of making many books, there is no end, and much study wearies the body." Man, that's true. I remember my college days. Much study wearied my body. So the purpose of this book of Ecclesiastes, the purpose of this book of wisdom, it really is the purpose of all of the wisdom books in the Bible. Solomon's teachings provide a guide and a stimulus for living a godly life. He also suggests that his teachings and the teachings of other wise people were given by one shepherd. This, of course, refers to God and his care and his concern for those he created. Because of the peculiar value and authority of this book, Solomon warned his readers not to seek answers beyond those God had given through the wise. That's why he said, "Be warned, my son, of anything in addition to them." If the readers and his son, if they would keep looking for answers in many other books, they would just wear themselves out. And I always, I'm a little bit leery. Look, I love it when I hear people are studying the Bible like they're supposed to be doing. I love it when I hear people reading, you know, reading good Christian books by reputable authors. But I get a little bit worried when they're like reading everything. Okay, because, I mean, there's lots of junk on YouTube or on the internet, stuff that's not worth anything. So Solomon's advice here is you know really well. It should be noted clearly. Be careful. You don't have to read everything ever written, because while there is a lot of good stuff out there, a lot of wisdom, some of it's not, and it's going to just lead you astray. Now, verse 13, he's going to give us some final advice. Fear God and keep his commandments. Now, all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God, keep his commandments, for this is the duty of every human being. Solomon concludes his book by stating that revering God is everybody's responsibility. And these are Solomon's words, the culmination of years of trying to live under the sun. In verse 14, for God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it's good or evil. The fact that the revering God is everybody's responsibility is underlined by the truth that God will bring every deed, that is, every human act, seen and unseen, into judgment. Everybody is answerable to God for everything he does. Now, this verse is taken by Christians often as referring to a future judgment after death. Okay? But this is probably not the case here. Though future judgment after death is very real, there is absolutely no indication that Solomon believed in such a judgment. Life after death was as enigmatic to Solomon and to everybody in the Old Testament as the unequal distribution of justice. As you read the Old Testament, you never read about hell or anything like that. And as a matter of fact, when you read the Psalms especially, you read about how the just and the unjust, the good and the bad, and the righteous and the evil, when they die, they all go to the same place. They all go to the grave. There was no fully developed theology of heaven and hell until, you know, much later on in Judaism and the New Testament. So thank God for his further revelation that we have, that the saints in the Old Testament did not have, but we have it, thanks to the New Testament and of course God's ultimate revelation in his Son. So as you're reading about, you know, judgment and so on, throughout Ecclesiastes, the emphasis is always on this life under the sun and its opportunities for service and enjoyment. Solomon had no thought of life after death, not like we have. Many other passages of Scripture, of course, do stress the eternal blessings of the righteous and the eternal punishment of the wicked. As I say, Solomon lived on the other side of the cross and in the comparative darkness of the progress of Revelation. But nevertheless, he affirmed his steadfast belief in God and in his justice. He was content to leave judgment, along with everything else, to God's timing. For God had made a time for everything. And so Solomon counseled his readers to enjoy life in the fear of God as God enables. If only people like us who live on this side of the cross would be as content as Solomon was to leave the questions and the enigmas of life in God's hands and to serve him acceptably and to simply enjoy life as he enables. How much better would we be off? I imagine that the stress level in our lives would decrease considerably if we would just learn the lessons of Ecclesiastes. Solomon wasn't always right, but boy, when he was wrong, when he was right, he was spot on. You're not going to have all the answers in life. So just deal with it. Live your life content with what you do know and with what you have. It's all a blessing from God. He can give you more or he can take it all away because you belong to him. Okay, gang, that's it. We're done Ecclesiastes. Next week, Lord willing, and he delays his return. We'll begin a survey of the letter to the Hebrews on Wednesday, and that starts next week. Now, don't forget, there's no podcast this Friday, but we will be back next Friday as we conclude our look at the gift of tongues. All right? Okay, folks, have a great rest of today and rest of the week. God bless you, and I guess we'll see each other next for the Sunday sermon on Sunday. God bless you. Have a great rest of the week. Thank you so much for tuning in today and for being a part of our worldwide Bible study group. I enjoyed it immensely. I sure hope you did too. God bless you, and we'll see you again real soon.